Thank you. First, I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Ali Mazawi. He's with UGA in Athens, Georgia. Joe Noel with us in Tifton, Georgia, and Anna Hale in Houma, Louisiana. Just a little bit of background here. Let me see. Back in 2004, well, in the early 2000s, the lignocellulosic to biofuels was a big issue. We started working on it very early in that time frame. And in Tifton, Georgia, in southern Georgia, there was a lot of talk about the different feedstocks that might fit down there between switchgrass, miscanthus, etc. The first thing I did was basically we did a study to evaluate different feedstocks. And pretty much from what we study there would be the two major feedstocks that came out of this that produce the most biomass would be napier grass or elephant grass and energy cane. And those are the ones we studied and compared to switchgrass, and then in other studies, miscanthus very much out yielded it. But we did find in this study, and it was published in 2012, that if we didn't add any inputs, of course, we had extreme reductions in yields. So we've done a number of other studies on N rate, and that's another story. But one of the energy cane cultivars, we had one that was in our nursery for decades and decades, L79102, which we used in that initial study. Well, we found out later on, if we started growing other energy canes, that the smut came pretty much decimated that genotype. But in 2007, we ended up, there was an interest in testing some energy canes across different areas. So the people in Houma decided to send us some material. We had nine energy cane entries were sent to us. We increased that material enough to develop a small test of 20-foot plots, single rows, and then we continued to harvest that for a number of years. And in that initial study, again, this was published in 2013, of the nine, we had a lot of variation in yield, and Joe Noel was the primary author on this, did a lot of work on the characterization of those sugars as well. Well, during that period of time, the Sun Grant Initiative wanted to test a bunch of energy canes. This was led by Brian Baldwin out of Mississippi State. And he knew that we had some of this material, and he included us in Tifton, Georgia. And it ended up that we also had having Athens, Georgia involved in that too. So we had two locations in Georgia at that time. So in this case, we did those nine. We measured the yield in 2008, 2009, and found that the sugar canes and the type 1 energy canes had the lowest biomass yields. Type 1 being those that are backcrossed to sugar canes. All right, so the objective of the study, was to take the five highest yielding genotypes out of that group and test it. And this was part of the DOA Sun Grant Feedstock Initiative. It was a multi-location study. It's been concluded now after a number of years. As I said, Brian Baldwin kind of initiated which entries we'd be using. And they basically matched the ones that were the highest yielding as far as biomass in Tifton, and as well as in northern Mississippi, where he was stationed. So we wanted to compare yield and phenotypic traits among lines, and compare bricks and juice content over years and lines. So in this this particular study, we're looking at the two locations in Georgia. Athens, Georgia is quite far north from us. We've in previous years, we were able to test napier grass or elephant grass and other grasses, and it survived for a substantial number of years. Occasionally, the freeze will be so substantial up there that it would freeze out material. But we found that the energy cane that we were testing here actually did survive fairly well in Athens. So the basic plot design was we had three rows, 10 meters long, each plot, and we destructively sampled one of those rows and then took yield on the other two. And these are the five entries. Again, the O2-147 and O2-144 are what would be considered true F1s, a wild cane versus times the sugar cane. The 72-114 was a back cross of sugar cane, and the 9001 and 9002 were back cross of the wild cane. And the phenotypically, you could really tell the difference here. The 9001 and 2 they had smaller diameter stalks and much more ratooning as well. Okay, so again, we took emergence data and we took on the during the growing season, we took height and biweekly bricks. At the end of the season, we took final bricks and then the harvest weight. And we took three stalks at the end and took the sap yield and moist weight and a dry weight. So we processed small amounts of the material to get the juice and measure the bricks. And then also then did the harvest of the biomass of the two rows. As you can see, we got very good growth, high biomass yields. All right, so first we'll look at the bricks. First, in Athens and in Tifton, there was a location, entry, year, month, and all the interactions were pretty much significant. And so basically, I'm not going to go through a year by year or all the interactions, but we'll take some of the highlights here. As far as the bricks, it was pretty obviously that the bricks level in Tifton was higher at the southern location than Athens. F1s had the highest brick content, which is a little bit surprising. It wasn't as they were higher than the back cross to the sugar cane, which is the 114, and then of course the back cross to the wild cane had the lowest bricks overall. And that's pretty consistent over location. And if you look at it, as far as on the timeline, in Tifton, the bricks continued to go up into December. And that's indicative of the climate, whereas the bricks in Athens went down because of freeze occurrences and such as that. And there were some course differences among the lines as I indicated earlier. In juice content, now this is where the sugar cane, the back cross of the sugar cane had much higher sugar content overall versus the other entries. And you can see the 9001, 9002 is really hard to get really extract much juice from that material, because that's again more of the wild cane, narrow stalks, etc. All right, so now let's look at the biomass yield. Now this again, we started in 2000, established it in the fall of 2008. So we started taking yields in 2009, and we've continued actually through this year as well. We'll be continuing to look at this to see how long the energy cane would survive. Because in sugar cane, as you know, what is the maximum is maybe three ratoons before it really reduces yield significantly. So here we got, you can look at the different entries, and it's a lot, it's a busy slide, but the main aspect to first is the 9001, 9002, and Tifton was consistently the highest yielder. But those, then if you look at the years, the red line in 2012 had the highest yield, and that would be the third Ratoon. And then the lowest yield was 2014. We thought that basically that it was playing out, that finally, you know, the energy cane was going to continue to decline. But then if you notice in 2015, it went back up. And so we didn't know exactly what the reason was. We look at the rainfall. If you rainfall data here on a per annual basis, really it doesn't follow any characteristic per se. So anyway, that's in Tifton. So look at it, 2012 as a high, 2014 as the low. If you look at Athens, on the other hand, again, 9001, 9002, more cold tolerant, along with the 144 seem to be more cold tolerant. If you look at the year, though, 2013 was the highest yielding in Athens, and the lowest yield was in 2011, and that was the second Ratoon. So it's very erratic year to year. Obviously, climate had to have a lot to do with this. So again, the rainfall, you could not, on an annual aspect, you couldn't really tell any difference there. Although the 2011, the rainfall was at 22, which is a little bit lower than the other years, but not that much lower than the following year. So if we look at the actual rainfall on a monthly basis, and I got in green there, that's the basically the growing season, the peak growing time. If you look at the high and low, say in Athens, in May, the rainfall was low in Athens, and in July again, whereas the rainfall in 2013 in May, etc., and in through the growing season was much higher. So you can tell that the rainfall, the seasonal rainfall, had a lot to do with it, at least in Athens. And then in Tifton, the same aspect, except in 2014, where we had a low yields, in May we had a significant amount of rain. But if you look into June, July, and August, that rainfall amounts were much lower. So obviously we went into a bit of a drought there. And in 2012, where the high yields, the rainfall was more consistent, and we actually had very high rainfall in August, as you can see. So obviously the climate aspects had a lot to do with why the different Ratoon yields were such. Average yields, again, the 9002 was the highest in Athens over years, and it was along with 9001 was the highest in Tifton. So these two would be the best as far as lignocellulosic biomass, not necessarily the juice yields, but at least for biomass. So in conclusion, we'd say that the F1 hybrids had the highest BRICS over locations. The Backcross 1 to sugarcane, or type 1, had the highest juice content. The Backcross 1 to wild cane, type 2, had the highest biomass, but lowest BRICS and juice content. Ratooning ability varied by year, but has been maintained for all the lines for 6-plus years. Again, we'll probably continue looking at these in Tifton, see how long the energy cane will produce, and see if there are continual differences among lines. And that is what I have. I acknowledge my technicians, Freddie and Tony Howell, and also the Department of Energy, DOE, for the Sun Grant Initiative Regional Feedstock Partnership. And I'll take any questions.
higher yields. So they were tuning potential of energy and what every temperature.
Yeah, there was some variation in temperatures for over years, and then the emergence varied to some extent, although not a great extent. The production early time of the year, we have height data, and we have a lot of the other data that we can use in this and in publication. But we'll try to decipher that as well as besides with the temperature. But temperatures generally in the peak growth period is pretty much the same across years. We think it's a lot more to do with the seasonal rainfall and such. So we fertilize pretty much the same, both locations, same amounts. But we did try we started split application later on, and that may have had something to do with it as well.
So do you have a indicator of how long that
Well, we'll keep looking. That first study where we had the 9 entries, which was established maybe a year or two earlier, the energy cane lines are continuing to hang in there. The yields are pretty good. But those lines that we eliminated at the end, they're more sugar cane type lines, they have depleted. So energy cane, obviously, with the cross with the wild cane is obviously extending the retuning ability. And we'll continue to look, see how, we don't know how long it's going to be.